I'm delighted today to be joined by Carsten Knobel, CEO of Henkel. Henkel is a global chemical and consumer goods company, or is it a global consumer goods and chemical company? We'll come to that. Almost 150 years old, listed in Germany and part of Germany's DAX 40, but also family controlled by members of the fifth generation. Over 20 billion euro revenues, over 50,000 employees worldwide. Carsten himself joined Henkel in 1995 and rose through the ranks, becoming CFO in 2012 and CEO in 2019, just in time for the COVID crisis. Carsten is also a member of the supervisory board of Lufthansa and of logistics company Kuhne Holding, and he is also currently vice president of the German Chemical Industry Association, among others. Carsten, a warm welcome to you, and many thanks for making the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much, Jean-François. Also, warm welcome from my side. Highly looking forward to our conversation.
Carsten, let me try to create a picture of Henkel for our listeners. You have two major business units, Adhesive Technologies and Consumer Brands, splitting the 22.5 billion revenues of last year roughly equally. The Adhesive Technologies is industrial B2B, of course, very different from the consumer brands. Tell us more about this major business, maybe what are the products, any brands we may recognize, and key competitors.
Most of the people know Henkel from its consumer brands. It's about laundry detergents, cleaning products, or hair care. But in fact, our company is much more. Because, you know, the Adhesive Technologies business is really the global leader in markets for adhesive sealants and functional coatings. It's a truly global business with an industry-leading portfolio of technologies, really unmatched applications, and an intense market know-how. And more than 100,000 customers in over 800 industries are served worldwide by our company, 11 billion of sales in the year 2022. And this is more than doubling the size of any other competitor in that field. That means better than doubling the number two. And it is the only player in the market with really a strong position in all its industries and technologies. And by that, the competitors landscape is very widely spread of different companies. The business units which we have are operating in three key areas. The one is mobility and electronics, the second is packaging and consumer goods, and the third one is craftsmen, construction and professional business. And important is we're not only selling products, but we're really selling solutions. Solutions in the industry and the consumer goods that touch our life really every day. And you know, it's about cars, it's about cell phones, computers, aircrafts, white goods, books and magazines, houses, furnitures, textiles, and you know, I could go on. And in that sense, our know-how and the solutions really are in numerous everyday's products, and they are our hidden champions. And developing our technologies and products closely with our customers is our key priority. We have engineers and experts which are involved in this product development process, and they always have these questions. What is the challenge our customer has? What needs to be worked better? How can we make the product more sustainable? And that's where our experts come in, and we don't really, as I mentioned it before, not only supply adhesives, with our solutions, what we are preparing and developing, we're enabling the transformation of the entire industry. And there are three brands which are really, you know, standing behind that, which is Loctite, which is Technomelt, and the third one is Bonderite. And maybe they are not so familiar to the end customers because it's mainly B2B. But only Loctite itself has annual sales of more than 3 billion euros. And by that, it is not only presenting Henkel's overall biggest brand, but it's for sure also the biggest adhesives brands around the globe.
Carsten, I wanted to ask you about this because this part of the business has been growing very nicely over the last few years and arguably is the most successful part of the group over that period. And I guess the question I wanted to ask is why the success? You said we're twice as big as the next one. You also started saying, and we're particularly good at developing solutions in partnership with customers. Is that the secret sauce, or is it also somehow you managed to acquire a critical mass through acquisitions? I mean, how come you've become so successful in this part of the business?
For me, you know, the success is primarily based on three aspects. The first aspect is our leading technology portfolio and really the unique innovation capabilities we're having. The second is the outstanding expertise of our global team, the experts which are behind in R&D, in sales, in marketing. And third, our proximity to our customers. We have a great know-how as the global leader in this industry. And by that, we are enabled to develop really tailor-made solutions for the customer needs. And but, you know, there is no success without constant change and the adaptation to changing structures and the consumer needs. So therefore, we introduced a new leadership team, which a more customer-focused setup in early 2023 and executing towards a clear strategy with a very clear focus on innovation strengths and especially on key megatrends like mobility, connectivity, and sustainability. And for sure, the point you mentioned, M&A also plays an important role because, you know, in the last couple of decades, we have been not only growing organically, but really we are M&A. And that is for sure an important factor in that context. And, you know, when we look in the current situation, everybody is talking about e-mobility, and that's also one of our focus areas. You know, we are driven by the desire for sustainable mobility, and by that we are providing high-impact solutions for the automotive industries, and by that significantly contributing to their performance in terms of safety, sustainability of modern e-cars, and especially with regards to battery assembly. And to give you a very concrete example what I mean with that, you know, in an average electrical vehicle, we have sales with a potential of up to 250 euro per car, and that compares with around 100 euro per car for a traditional car with a combustion engine. You'll see 2.5 times a higher potential in that context. And here we are really committed, and you heard me saying sustainable solutions, and the leadership in sustainability, which we offer, is really something which is important because we want to enable emission reduction and also circularity. And by that, we are committed to further leverage our global leading market position, and by that, delivering also further growth.
So we'll come back on the sustainability aspect. But what I'm hearing is a clever portfolio development over the years, being smart about where to play and how to win, and in particular about investing early in areas where we're going to have big tailwinds, of course, including electric vehicles and other mega trends. Now, you also have a consumer brand group, which was created relatively recently by grouping the laundry and home care business and the beauty care business, where laundry and home care, I think, is about 2/3 of the unit and beauty care about 1/3. Please tell us about these two business units, product competitors, and also why you chose to integrate them into a consumer brand group.
Thank you, Jean-François. Good, very good question. And you know, you just mentioned at the beginning closely 150 years of existing. And we started with the laundry and home care business almost 150 years ago. And today, our laundry and home care portfolio includes laundry detergents such as Persil, dishwashing brands like Pril, as well as the Bref cleaning product range. And on the other side, we have the hair category, and we are active on the one side in the consumer goods markets with hair care, with colorations, and with styling, and also in the hair professional business. And the ones hopefully everybody knows are top brands like Schwarzkopf, like Sires, and also Dial. And last year, we decided to merge our two consumer businesses and bringing all these categories under one roof, including also our successful hair salon business. All of that brings together a multi-category platform for future growth. We're starting with around 11 billion of sales. And since early 2023, we are live with our new combined business. And I have to say, it's the biggest transformation of our company since some decades. And I'm really proud to share that we are able to implement that much faster than planned with really positive results. And For sure, I've been asked quite often, why are we doing this? And you know, there are several reasons behind. Because first of all, it offers us, I mentioned it, the platform, and by that improved opportunities to implement portfolio measures with greater consistency, and as well as targeted acquisitions. Also here it comes back, M&A also has played and will play also in the future an important role. And with this merger, we are also focusing our portfolio on really strategic core businesses and brands with more attractive growth rates, more attractive gross margin potential, and by that driving on the one side profitability, but on the other side generating additional growth dynamics, which we need. And in that part of creating this growth dynamics, one important fact is creating synergies. And here we have clearly pointed out that in the midterm, we aim to realize gross savings of around 500 million euro with that merger.
Wow.
And this will allow us two directions. On the one side, more targeted investments in innovation, sustainability, and digi, as well as strong marketing support, and that's the second part, to our strong, attractive brands. And you know, with the consumer brands business, we will drive growth and profitability for our consumer business as well as for Henkel going forward. Hope that helps.
And absolutely, thank you. And very clear point here. We're trying to save on the more back office part of the business in order to invest in the consumer facing, including the marketing areas. Now, why had these businesses been so challenged? In particular, the beauty care business has not been growing much at all. What was the challenge?
Yeah, so I think we should look at that in a differentiated way. So first of all, we announced our growth strategy when I took over at the beginning of 2020. And here we clearly said, we want and we will invest more in our products and marketing. And by that, we're accepting lower margins for a transitional period. So that was the starting point. But on top, we see really enormous cost increases on raw materials and logistics sites over the last couple of years.
Okay.
And to give you a little bit more insights in that, you know, in total, we had €1 billion more cost to absorb in 2021 and around €2 billion in 2023. And this impacted obviously also our profitability. And the differences between us and our competitors in the consumer goods industry is also based on the portfolio. You know, we are not only a beauty company, but also a large player, or even a larger player, you said it, two-thirds, one-third, in the laundry and home care. And the costs have been risen much more sharply than pure cosmetic companies with greater strains on our margins. And on top, we had, you know, to discontinue or to sell low-margin brands with sales of more than 600 million in the last 2.5 years, and that for sure puts pressure on the top line. And the last one, I think, is a strategic decision or a geopolitical decision, because unlikely than many other competitors in our area, we have exited Russia. Russia contributed roughly €1 billion of sales to our company in the consumer and in the adhesives technology space. And for us, it was absolutely the right decision.
Indeed, I want to ask you, because I think that you guys were indeed quite resolute. What I heard is worked on the portfolio, worked on making it possible for us to reinvest more in innovation and marketing. And that, of course, meant generating more resources by being more efficient in the support functions and so on, hence the grouping. So thank you for this. Now, these are two very different businesses, right? Industrial B2B, consumer a bit B2B, but mainly B2C, very different competitors. And then overall, the group stock price has been arguably lagging some of your competitors. And that's usually, at least for some time, and that's usually the moment where many external analysts come and give you advice. And many of them have asked, why don't you guys split up this company into two more homogeneous and coherent segments? For example, recently Solvay, the Belgian chemical company, decided to break into two parts, one more innovation and science-based, the other one more traditional products, more cash cow sort of thing. So far, you have disagreed with this call to split up the company. Can you help us understand what has been your rationale and why you believe that the company is better and stronger together?
Very good question, Jean-François. Thank you for that. For sure, it's not the first time that I hear that. So, of course, I disagree. And let me point out, because you were referring also to the share price, Henkel's share price in the last 12 months developed, I would say, significantly better than the average of our industrial and consumer peers. And I mentioned it before, the idea to break up the group is not new, especially in discussions with analysts, with investors. It's always a recurring topic now for years in my time as a CFO, but also during the tenure when I started the CEO job. And, as a management team, we have to do what we believe is the best in the long term for our company. And we firmly are convinced of this two strong pillar approach or model, as it offers the highest value from our point of view and is in the best interest of the company, but also in the interest of the shareholders. And with the merger, we have really created a second strong pillar next to our very successful Adhesive Technologies business division. And both business units, as well as the Henkel Group, I think they continue to benefit from the synergies from the joint use of the infrastructure. Henkel, with these two strong pillars, has also a greater financial strength and gives us really the opportunity to fund larger strategic acquisitions in both business units compared to a standalone setup. And maybe finally on that part, I think being active in different business areas with different exposure to business cycles and market dynamics, from our point of view, helps us really to balance risk and on the other side, to steer our company successfully through crisis periods, as we have seen it in the global crisis in 2008 or in the recent COVID years, where I think Henkel came, quite solid through that period, for sure with impacts, but not in any way endangering the health and the long-term situation of the company.
So shared infrastructure was your first point. Second point, look, we're a larger company together, and so that gives us more firepower for acquisition. And the third one is risk diversification and balancing. Fair?
More than fair.
Now, you mentioned earlier already when you took over as CEO in 2019, you launched in 2020 a purposeful growth program. And as you were launching it, or you were about to launch it, the COVID crisis erupted. And clearly, the COVID crisis was unexpected and quite brutal. Now, you could have done what many firms did at that time, which is a lot of retrenching. But instead, you took a number of courageous decisions. Please tell us about some of your key decisions then and why you decided to lean that way, basically by emphasizing we're not only going to play defense, we're also going to play a lot of offense.
As you said, I started my CEO tenure more or less in the middle of COVID, and we took some courageous decision. Was not easy, especially in the first year of my CEO tenure. But decisions are there to be made. But yes, you're right. COVID really changed our lives fundamentally. And when we were confronted with the first wave of infections, we had, first of all, a real robust crisis management processes in place. That's the first thing. Second, our crisis teams worldwide acted fast, they were decisive, and they were effective. And we took immediate actions to ensure the safety of our employees as well, and I think that was important, the continuity of our business. We had a strong and a scalable digital infrastructure where we had investing a couple of years before, and by that most of our administration and also non-production teams were able really to work from the first day from home. And despite the crisis, we have really succeeded in keeping our business operational worldwide. So, definitely an important factor. Second, I would say dimension, no layoffs. Right. No layoffs due to the pandemic, and by that we really guaranteed a minimum incentive also for our employees worldwide. And third, we paid a stable dividend also to our shareholders and did not need any government aid program. That was really important. brave decisions, definitely. And despite the focus on the crisis management, here we were able to launch and to start and to implement our growth agenda, our purposeful growth agenda. And by that, you know, we would see that very proud from my side how our colleagues around the world dealt with this extreme challenge with entrepreneurial spirit, with courage, with creativity. On the other side, I think we secured certain things for themselves and their family. And I think that demonstrated what we all here at Henkel stand for. We stand for our shared values and for a strong corporate culture. And you know, that is also what Henkel makes and has made Henkel always special in the last 147 years.
So two questions on this. First, did it help that Henkel is a family control company or not, including in terms of getting shareholder support? And my second question is, does the timing of your appointment play a role? So is there an aspect of, look, I just announced a growth program. I'm not now going to turn around 3 months later and say, oops, sorry, changed my mind. So how much did it help that you were a family controlled company? And how much did the timing affect your decision?
So first of all, and immediately, yes. No, I really felt from the first second a strong support of our major shareholder throughout this crisis. Yeah? In the exchange with our shareholders committee, we discussed the current situation and the measures really on an ongoing basis. I have a very direct contact with the chairwoman, with Simone Bagel, and you know, we are meeting, could meet every day by, for sure, virtual setup in that most of the cases. But I also experienced the support of our crisis management in many discussions with the investors in that course. And of course, I would have wished, you know, a different start for me as a CEO. But looking back, I'm really convinced that we have done a very good job in dealing with the crisis, and not only with the measures which we implemented, but really in particular that it brought us closer together as a team. And in retrospect, you know, I would have not done so much differently. Well, maybe we would have even liked to see even faster decisions in some situations, but it has not really impacted how I thought about what we need to do.
You had just announced the purposeful growth. If you had announced it, I don't know, 2 years before, do you think that you would still have said, no layoff, we continue? Or would you have said, look, I said this 2 years ago, maybe I can change my mind now?
No, I believe, and I think the last 4 years have shown that. And for sure, the different crises and situations, the COVID, when we talked about the material price increases, the Russia exit, all of that were for sure not supporting me in executing, and the whole team of that. But you know, on that part, we were very clear. We thought it is the right strategy, and we executed on that right strategy. And it looks like, if we look at 2023, that it's really starting to pay off on the top line, in gross margins, in the bottom line, in free cash flow, in adding M&A topics. So I would say no change in that, independent if it was would have been 2 years earlier in that context.
So that's very useful. What I'm hearing is, look, if you look at my last 4 years, you will see that this is a pattern. I believe in growth. I believe in investing. And I believe in pursuing an expansion agenda rather than fine-tuning and only managing costs down. I think I get that clear sense from you.
If I may jump in, Jean-François, I think that's important. I think what we see in this world, and for sure also based on a quite high pressure from the capital market, is, you know, if something is not working immediately, you get under pressure to change and to rephrase certain things. But I believe that you need also a certain time until things can be executed and show progress. And I think that's exactly what we did. And maybe that comes back to one of your questions before. Here, I think it's important to have long-term oriented shareholders, and in that case the Henkel family, which is the major shareholder, which gives also the trust and also the credibility behind that what you're doing is the right thing. And for sure, in crisis it takes longer than if the world would be in normal mode.
Now, purposeful growth had four major blocks: winning portfolio, competitive edge, which included a strong sustainability dimension, future-ready operating models, and collaborative culture and empowered people. Maybe let me ask two, three questions on these, if I may. Competitive edge had, I think, three sub-elements, but in particular had a sustainability dimension. You alluded to this before. Please tell us how important and central this sustainability dimension is, and to what extent you feel that maybe you're doing more or differently than some of your competitors.
You know, sustainability is for Henkel a very important topic, and it's deeply anchored in our DNA. You know, we have been more or less the first company starting with sustainability reports even 25 years ago. So sustainability strategy really reflects our commitment in that context of purposeful growth, because we aim to create more value for our stakeholders and by acting sustainably for the benefit of the current but also of future generations. And at Henkel, we see the climate change as one of the greatest challenges that we are facing today, and by that also requiring urgent, I'm saying really urgent and ambitious actions. And it's also critical here to protect and regenerate our resources like forest, water, or biodiversity for the present and again for future generations. And we acknowledge that companies like Henkel also have to play a role in meeting these challenges. I think here's a big context that politics, society, and economy needs to play together. And our new and our revised sustainability strategy really sets our long-term ambitions in three dimensions. It's about the planet, it's about the communities, and also about our partners. And we have a great impact in our consumer business by fostering sustainable packaging solutions. We have here a clear ambition for circular economy. So, for example, for 2025, what we want is that all our packaging will be designed for reuse and for recycling. And today, we are already at around 90%, and we aim to reduce the amount of plastics from fossil sources in the consumer area, in consumer products, by 50%. And another part is the climate protection, because by 2030, we want to make all our production processes worldwide climate positive. And to achieve this, we are reducing really our carbon footprint at all sites by using energy from renewable resources. And you know, since the last 2 years, we have been bringing 18 of our locations already at climate positive in that context. And I think that's exactly the direction we want to see, not only talking about theoretical things, but really bringing that into action. And I think that's important. And to motivate also our people, we have also linked that to our management compensation. So 20% of the long-term incentive for our top management is directly to the achievement of sustainability targets like CO2 reduction or gender parity, because we take that also in the broader context of ESG.
Is this a very large investment budget? These, I think, 18 facilities where you're supporting strong energy transition, or does this pay for itself? How hard is it on you in terms of an investment program?
Naya, I think it's definitely hard. It doesn't come easy. In order to get to that, you need to change formulas, you need to change the setup, and that's really cost intense. But on the other side, I think it's something which is also more and more needed if you go into the future. So, and therefore we have defined clear goals, clear ambitions where we want to set ourselves in a specific time frame, and that we also want to measure that on a regular basis. But yes, it will be costly. But I also have to tell you, it's integrated in our mid-term ambition, which we have been going out to the market at the beginning of 2022. So that's clear.
Now, another aspect is five key elements of a culture of innovation. Can you, so clearly innovation is a significant component of your purposeful growth program. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the things that you're doing to really speed up and energize your innovation engine?
Yeah, one of the important factors is definitely a situation that we're investing more. On purpose, we decided to reset our margins to get more investments into that. And if I go for the adhesive technology business, we have in the meantime created a setup where we create so-called inspiration centers. One of that is in Düsseldorf, here in our headquarters, where we have combined the whole European setup, bringing 600 research people into, I would say, the biggest innovation center, not only at Henkel for adhesives, but within the industry. Combining, you know, different forces. And I think coming back to what I said at the beginning, the most important point, we also include customer laboratories into that setup in order to have a really strong exchange when it comes to innovation. And we are not doing that in one center. We have also, we are just executing that in Shanghai for the Asia region. We have a similar center, a little bit smaller, in Bridgewater in the US. So you see, we are also reflecting regional needs, more investment, more innovation capabilities, more R&D, and I think all these three factors together will bring us into the situation that we will move on that part of innovation and creating a competitive edge related to that.
So more centralized innovation on one side, but also application centers and always this closeness to the customer.
And maybe the last point, you know, when we talk about innovation, I'm 100% convinced when you talk about innovation, these two factors, digital and sustainability, play into that innovation directly or indirectly.
You also mentioned Russia's invasion of Ukraine was a very significant crisis for you because you had a big exposure there. 5% of your revenues, 11 plants. You made the courageous decision indeed to get out. Please tell us how you thought about this, how your management team reflected on this.
I would say upfront, most probably the most critical decision I needed to take during the last 4 years. You know, on the morning of February 24th in 2022, we activated immediately our crisis team. We thought about how we could best help our 600 colleagues in Ukraine and their families, ensuring their safety, supplying them with cash, with all the necessary needs. And we also had, you know, 4 production plants in Ukraine, which we had to close immediately, and much, much more. And, you know, already on the second day after the attack, we launched an aid package. The aid package included emergency aid for the colleagues, donations for the International Red Cross, paid time off for volunteers on other countries who wanted to support as refugees or the refugees or aid organizations at the border. And I have to say, and that showed again really the Henkel spirit, I was really overwhelmed by the solidarity of the Henkel employees. The teams from neighboring countries supported the refugees, donations, money was collected. I think this was, I would say, unendless support. And the accommodations were really provided for the colleagues and their families. And now maybe changing a little bit more to the Russian part on your question, we took immediate actions. 48 hours after that war, we stopped all advertising, all sponsorships, and all investments in Russia. And the implementation of all the international sanctions, for sure, we took into account, which or in execution, which had been made against Russia. And I would say that's on the one side. On the other side, we had 2,500 people, 11 production sites, you pointed that out, 19 sites overall. And companies that produce outside Russia and only export their goods to that country, you know, they were able to stop their businesses relatively easily. That was not possible for us. You know, termination of our business could have had very serious consequences. And we have seen that also for some companies in this year. And in addition, there was with that the concrete risk for local managers, sure, for our people, that site managers would also have been held personally responsible. And therefore, in the following weeks of the attack, we were criticized quite intensively for not simply stopping our businesses. And therefore, we had to ask ourselves, really, can we continue to stay doing business in Russia under these circumstances or not? That was the situation, how it started before the decision.
One of my colleagues and a colleague of the University of St. Gallen actually did a study earlier this year of how many companies that had active operations in Russia actually withdrew from Russia. And the answer was, earlier this year, around 10%. which means that around 90% of companies somehow did not really exit. And here, this is not a point of criticizing anyone. It's just, you know, that's a matter of empirical evidence. A lot of people said we're stopping, but very few people actually did. And I think you guys are one of the companies that ultimately paid a certain price for this decision. And so that's why I'm asking you how difficult a decision it was, and again, how you managed to get an agreement from your stakeholders, and also to execute the plan in a way that indeed was not overly detrimental to your Russian employees.
As I said, most probably the biggest and the most difficult decision I had to take until now. We made a careful analysis of the situation. For sure, we exchanged, I exchanged with other board members of German or also international companies. And for sure, we intensively discussed it, within the management board, but also with our shareholders committee. I told you at the beginning, we are standing for, values of our company. And I think at the end, that took us to the point that we came to that conclusion that we believe that it makes no sense for us to do business. Therefore, we stopped doing business in we decided to stop doing the business in April 19. That is only 2 months after, the war started. And 1 year later, in April 2023, we closed the sale of all our business activities in Russia by divesting it to a consortium of local financial investors. And by that, we gave away $1 billion of turnover, an over-proportional profitability business. We have been number one in all our businesses, means laundry and home care, beauty care, and adhesives. I think we brought a very complex process to a successful completion. We believe it is the right decision, and I would take the same decision today as we have taken it. And I think that's, I would say, what we can state to that.
Last question on this. You have in your deal in Russia a sort of call option, meaning that you might be able to return. Do you think you will be able to return at some point?
Jean-François, I don't want to speculate on that topic. I think I have to act for sure in the interest of all shareholders or all stakeholders in that context. There can be a change. First of all, there needs to for sure a stop of the war and most probably a change of the regime in order to think about that this option can come into reality. Therefore, I wanted to give us all the opportunities in the future, and therefore we were also putting that kind of call option into our contract, which has been a kind of a common practice for the Western companies that sold their business in Russia. But all the rest, I think, is up to speculation, and let's wait and see how the next couple of years will develop.
Very fair. As you know, I'm a professor of leadership. I have to ask you one or two personal questions. Now, you were quoted in an interview saying that when you were offered the job, you asked yourself quite consciously, am I the right guy for this? That makes a lot of sense, of course, and I think that we would all like to think that we asked ourselves the question. I was just curious, how do you ask yourself that question, though, in a honest way? You were CFO, and they come to you and they say, we think you're the one. How did this self-questioning go?
Yeah, so... when I became the CEO in January 20, I had been part of the board as the CFO for already 8 years. I looked back on the experience on the board. I was also for sure watching the CEOs I've been working together. I got also some outside interviews. So I could build really on my past experience and also the long understanding of Henkel, because being roughly at that point 25 years with the company and had both experience in the industrial and also in the consumer business. But at the end, and that is definitely what I see now in retrospect after 4 years being at the helm of the company, the role and the task as a CEO is completely different of any other board position as the CFO or anything else, because at the end, you are the final decision maker and you are at the end responsible for 50,000 people of the company. I have, when I was the CFO, I had always the kind of the concept that the CFO or the financial director is always a kind of a co-pilot of the plane or the company. And by that, as a co-pilot, for sure you support the decision, you have some opinions, you impact it, but at the end you're not the final decision maker on that. And self-critically, you know, I must say, we had done a lot of things right in the past, also when I was at the board as CFO, but we also made mistakes. And for me, I think one of the biggest learnings is, you know, to learn from the mistakes, remain open for new decisions. So the time was right to take a very critical look, realign things and develop a clear agenda to steer Henkel into a successful future. And by that, we were not only looking at business issues, but also analyzed and discussed about the culture and the way we work together as a global team in the future, because I think you know better than me, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So with other words, you can have the best strategy in the world. If you not have the people, if you not have the team, if you not have the culture in order to drive that, you will not succeed. So the culture is the foundation of the strategy. So I have put a lot of emphasis on that part of bringing the team together, creating a new spirit, or bringing the spirit back, which has always been characterizing our company. And, you know, that is what I say, one of the credos I brought into, and by that being the driver of change you want to see.
What I'm hearing is that you not only thought about, am I going to do a good job? Am I the right person? But you also thought, at least I'm hearing, you also thought about what kind of CEO do you want to be, and what are some of your key principles? What is the fundamental ethos that you wanted to bring to the job?
Yeah, so, you know, the CEO, you know, for sure, I ask and I was in that question, what kind of leader, you know, I want to be and what I would like to stand for. You know, I truly believe in empowerment and an enablement, as well as, you know, an open feedback culture. You know, I would encourage everybody to be brave, to venture new ideas and concept, and also willing to go for an uncharted territory. And also, and I think that's, I would say, one of the biggest topics within corporate cultures, also not being afraid of making a mistake, and but also being open to accept feedback from others and take responsibility for what you do. And at the same time, I would encourage you to be open with your feedback, you know, to me as the CEO. And you know, for a CEO, I think it's critical to surround you with people who dare to speak up and tell you what's working and what's not working. And I can tell you, sometimes you are quite alone in your office, because there is a lot of, you know, distance, and I'm trying to, you know, break that distance and be together with the people and give them the freedom really to ask openly what they believe, they think, because, you know, at the end, you're not winning this game alone. It's like in, you know, I'm very related to sports and to football. You can have a lot of individual players, but if you're not working really as a team, that's not possible to win. And I would say that's the things I have taken into that context of what is important to be a CEO and what kind I'm expecting from my team. And maybe to add one point, it's the passion and the engagement. I want to see passion, I want to see engagement of our employees, and really a willingness and the aspiration to be challenged in order to improve. Because life is a constant improvement, especially in these tough times in which we're in.
And interestingly, for an ex-CFO, I'm also hearing you being a very growth-oriented CEO.
That's also a learning of my CFO time, because, you know, for sure I was also focusing on efficiency. But, you know, efficiency at a certain point comes to an end. You can't do this until eternity. And if you want on a long term to develop, aspire, and to survive, I think you need to have a growth component, because that's the only thing at the end, yeah, to attract customers, to attract consumers, to convince them. And that's exactly what is needed. And I think that the last thing what is needed is the ability and the openness to change. What was good as a CFO maybe is not good. Maybe it's not wrong. It's not good to talk about what is good. But what is relevant to be a CFO maybe needs to be adapted and changed if you have a different role in that context now for me being the CEO.
Last question for you, Carsten. You really, really seem like a guy who enjoys his job. You love your job because...
First of all, I think Henkel is a great company. I'm here 28 years with exciting brands, technologies. But I think, again, first and foremost, it's about great people and a great team having on board. And I can tell you, we went to tough times. We have this year a way where it's getting or significantly going better. And it's fantastic to see how these people are participating in the journey. And not only here in Düsseldorf, but really, you know, now being also possible to again travel through the world and to visit the other parts of Henkel. And it's fantastic to see in every country how dedicated the teams, the people are, and how they are burning for that company. And that's fantastic to see. And you know, that's why I love my job.
And your energy and passion is quite contagious. Carsten, thank you very much for your time. All the best to you and to your organization as you continue to try to pursue this purposeful growth strategy, including with a very strong sustainability focus. All the best to you.
Thank you so much, Jean-François. It was great to talk to you.